So excited.
Break. Seriously.
So she's a big Disney fan. She's not
Okay.
crazy, but she's
She's
a
not
she's
like
a
my wife.
oh, is she?
No, she's also like my wife has been to Disney World probably 30 times in her life.
Heck yeah, that's
Welcome once again to Chill Filtered, the podcast where we drink whiskey so you don't have to, but you probably should, and you probably are, and that's why we like you. Another great episode, another special episode. I'm looking forward to this one. We got Brian Rapp back on, but the reason for that is not because he is the official co-host potentially yet, but more so because I decided to narrow it down to Brian and Ben, and each one gets one more episode to prove themselves. It's kind of like Survivor. How do they like snuff out your torch or something, or do they take away your what do they call those things? The buffs. Yeah. I don't know how it works, but
The
here
torch for sure.
So yeah, either one of these guys might have their torch extinguished, but one of them will move on to be the survivor and survive along with me. And that's a fun way to put it, but here's one way to talk about business. Hey, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/chillfiltered. The offer is still on the table. Let's just say this. The offer is still on the table. If we get to $1,000 a month on Patreon, I will butt chug a Macallan 18 and do that for our listeners. The game is not, I'm not, I'm a man of my word, and days are to come where we will get to that point. And I hope you're there, listener. I hope you're there, Patreon supporter. So, that is the business. Let's get onto the podcast. Brian, it's good to have you back. Tell me about your last 3 weeks or so.
Yeah, it is good to be back. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
And last 3 weeks, it's been really fun listening to everybody. I'm convinced I
Totally.
need a Ardbeg Heavy Vapors now.
Oh yeah.
That sounded so good on
Ah.
Ben's episode.
Yeah.
The the fruity notes, you guys were tossing out tropical notes, and that jives with me a lot. And the smoky with the tropical sounds great.
Yeah, it's I thought it was a really good experiment. Like I was saying, like, hey, take out the purifier. Is it still top tier Islay Scotch? And it was. So
Yeah.
who knows what they're doing otherwise? Yeah.
When people mention tropical fruity notes and throw out like pineapple and stuff, I think Irish whiskey, but like, I mean, I know it's not Irish whiskey, but was it similar in that fruity
I
ness?
would say so. Like even like Ardbeg in general, outside of this one, like you talk about the purifier and you're like, okay, so like Irish whiskey is usually triple distilled, and sometimes it's just like really going for that like refreshing, which is what you get on like things like that. Yes, this was, even with the purifier removed from the process, refreshing. And even with the smoke, like not everyone thinks a smoky peated scotch is refreshing, but like, ah man, I gotta smell it again, because this was like, yeah, it was great. It was great.
Yeah, for sure. And shout out to Ben's acid reflux joke. Had me rolling. That was good.
Wait, remind me.
It was you're
Oh, that's
explaining
right.
the how it condenses and falls back down or whatever, and acid reflux and whatnot.
Yeah.
But
And
yeah, past 3 weeks have been good. We actually went up to Vegas a couple weekends
ooh.
ago,
What do you do
and
when you're in Vegas?
so I not a whole heck of a lot. That sounds like we're not. I'm not a gambler. I don't just I don't like doing that with my money. I'm not against it or
Totally.
anything, but
Yeah.
not what I do. But the whole reason for the trip was Sam, my wife, had identified what is it? A musical of Hunchback of Notre Dame
Nice.
that she really, really wanted to go to. And it was at a really cool
Sweet.
amphitheater in like Southwest Utah. So we stayed in Vegas for a couple of days. We drove over for that show and then drove back to Vegas, and the show was phenomenal. It was
Nice.
really cool to be outside under the stars and everything. And when the stage lights would go out, if you look up, you see stars above you, and that was all really cool. And
So,
the
okay,
musical
go
was
on.
done really well and everything. Yeah.
So, I'm a fan of your wife. I've seen her art recently, and
Yeah.
she seems pretty cool.
Yes.
But why was she so into that specific musical?
So she's a big Disney fan. She's not
Okay.
crazy, but
It's not like
she's
my
a
wife. No.
oh, is she?
No, she's also like, my wife has been to Disney World
probably 30 times in her life.
Oh, heck yeah. That's we've been to Disney several times. Mm-hmm. We usually go for the last, I don't know, we've been married in like 9 years or eight years. And nice. We've gone about every 2 years or so. So
nice.
We've been three or four times.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, definitely. And especially living so close to California, it's pretty easy to just drive out there and spend a weekend. So.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But she's a big fan of Disney. She loves all the classic Disney musicals. I'm just blanking on words right now, but Hunchback is number one for sure.
Really?
So she and it's not your typical number one. And she just really, really loves it. The music is awesome. Mm. And they totally did it justice in this musical.
Nice.
It was really, really, really fun. In Vegas, though, have you seen the Sphere?
I've only seen it in pictures, but it looks crazy.
So
did you go inside or anything like that?
So we went inside.
Whoa.
Yep. It's so they were only showing, they were showing U2 concerts. That was kind of like the brand, the grand opening dealio.
Was it like virtual or I know they were there, but was it like every time it was like an actual like U2 Bono was there and everything?
Yep, it was a legitimate concert on the floor of the whole deal that I'll explain here in a minute. But what we went to actually was the very first showing on the very first day of this movie that they made for it.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, and it's like it was like a Planet Earth kind of thing where they just really cool visual landscapes, just cool parts of the world you'd never see otherwise.
That's sweet.
And it was just a 45 minute fun thing that they put together that was just visually spectacular. Where
that's cool.
We sat pretty much in the middle and you look to your left, the screen goes, I mean, you're in the inside of a dome, so the sphere goes all the way left and a little bit more, and this, and it goes all the way right and a little bit more, and you look up and it goes all the way back and a little bit more.
That's crazy.
You really feel like you're in it. So
that's
we were sitting in the middle, and it was super fun. It wasn't like it wasn't make a whole trip out of Vegas out of it, but it's an absolute must go the next time you go to Vegas.
When we lived in Arizona, Heather and I were planning one trip there, and yeah, like I'm not a big Vegas guy. In fact, when Robbie and I went, I was kind of turned off by the whole thing just because of the sheer like
insanity
that it is. And like even going to like, what was it, Fremont Street, and being like, there's so many homeless people here, just so much like not even half dressed women, like just like skimpy everything, and like you're like, this is the street, like it's just crazy to me. Like I'm just
you're teaching me on that. I've actually never been to Fremont.
Oh no. Yeah, and I mean when you're walking down the strip, you'll also deal with very, you know, like just very I don't even know what the word would be, like just very open, hey, anything goes. And I was kind of just put off by that, to be honest. But I still enjoyed the food. I still enjoyed walking around, and I still enjoyed losing my, I think I set aside like $200.
Oh,
I enjoyed losing that within 30 minutes or less. No, it was honestly like 10 minutes or less. I hit up the, you know, some of the best odds in Vegas are at the roulette table. And I was like, yeah, just put it on. Did I ever tell you this? Maybe I mentioned on the podcast, but we go to the roulette table. I put like $50 down. And I was ready to lose it all. Like I can lose it and be done and then walk away and just be like, hey, I had $200 to lose and I lost it.
Yeah.
But yeah, go to the roulette table, put it down. And, you know, I basically said red or black because that's, you know, close to half odds of winning, but of course a little less. And it lands on green, the first one.
What?
Yeah. And then I like, I think I won once out of the next four times I played my $50.
Yeah.
And then the green hit again in those next four rolls. And I was like, okay, I guess this is meant to be, because like green is, you know, like what, like one in 40 or no, 2 in 40 or something like that. So like 5% chance of, you know, getting on it. And I hit it twice in my five rolls. So
yeah, that's dumb. I've had similar experiences. First couple of times I went to Vegas, I think actually the first time, I've never done like card tables. It does sound cool if I was to get into it and try to play the odds and blah, blah, blah. But I just don't want to put in the effort.
So and then, especially with blackjack. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I blew like 50 in roulette the first time I went, and I put 20 in a slot machine, and it was just gone instantly the second time that I went to Vegas. And I was like, I'd rather just buy a $20 drink or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So and that's that was what funny. I did. Going with Robbie and his brother-in-law, the time that I did go, his brother-in-law loves Vegas, like just is absolute fan of Vegas, but he doesn't gamble. He doesn't drink. So it's like, but he also collects art. So it's like, I get it. Like there's a lot of really good art dealers out there.
Yeah.
But then Robbie doesn't gamble either. So it's just like, we were just, I was the only one like playing anything, but I, like I said, I was very quick and in and out and gone. But yeah, it was funny about that. But yeah, I was kind of like put off, but Heather and I were planning on going to see My Chemical Romance when they had their big tour, but they canceled it with COVID. We bought the tickets before COVID and then they canceled it. So we're like, I guess we're never going. Plus we never got to go to Disneyland either because of COVID. We were planning on it while we were out there, but it's crazy because we were out there for like 3+ years and still never got to go. But like, that's one, it would have been like on the top of our list if it weren't for COVID. So
right
yeah,
but other than that, the eclipse the other day was pretty cool.
How I was, you got like 60% or something like that.
I don't know what the percent is, but I was the nerd out there cutting up Amazon box, poking a hole in the end, trying to
pinhole projector, baby.
Yeah, exactly. I had a nice, really, really long box.
I saw that.
It actually made a nice sharp image on the other end. It was pretty cool. But I love that stuff. I just love the idea that something celestial is happening. And
we have something in common.
Oh yeah,
me and you, Brian. Well, when I went to college, go ahead. No,
yeah. I'm just interrupting you all day here.
No, you're fine. You're
the
fine.
That motivated us to be like, okay, well, let's book tickets for the April one next year. So we've got some friends in San Antonio, and so we chatted them up and said, hey, can we stay with you? So I booked plane tickets to San Antonio over April next year. April 8th, I think, is
okay.
8 or 10.
I might join you because I also have a lot of friends in San Antonio too.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And I need a good reason to do something like that because I've never actually seen a full eclipse in my whole life.
Oh yeah, you got to do it. We the previous one was in
2016?
There. It went across the Midwest. I don't remember when it exactly was, but we flew into Kansas to visit my family, and then we drove up the day of the eclipse. We drove out to like a rest stop in the middle of nowhere.
Nice.
That was really close to the center line of the totality center line.
Was it packed?
It wasn't packed, but there were plenty of people out there. Mm-hmm. We were literally in the middle of a grassy field. It was middle of nowhere, Missouri. So, but the clouds parted just right when the eclipse happened. Nice. And yeah, it was perfect. The crickets and cicadas started making noise and everything like it was dusk. It was really, really cool.
That's super cool. I, when that came around, I was literally on an airplane, from Colorado to, Alberta or Calgary rather.
Okay.
And my sister and I were doing a little trip in Banff area. So I didn't get to see that one, but I was like, I think it was along the path. Like we were, I think, and I don't even remember, I could have even looked down and saw like the sky go darker or something, but I don't even remember that flight really. So, but then, yeah, other years, like I've seen only partials. So yeah, that'd be cool. Maybe I will make that journey.
Yeah, probably book sooner rather than later on that. Probably
that's a good point. Is like the dead centers around San Antonio?
No, San Antonio actually only half the city. The northwest half is in totality. The southeast half is not in totality.
I used to live in the northwest portion of San Antonio too. So
that's cool. Yeah, you used to live everywhere. I forgot about that.
Yeah, name a spot. Probably been close.
right.
Yeah. No, that's so cool. And the funny thing was when there was one in like 2013 or so, maybe it was 2012, but it was a partial where I was in Colorado. Mm-hmm. And I brought my whole department in my job in IT out to the, the outside. And I was like, look, I made a pinhole projector. That's the eclipse. Don't look at it. That's the eclipse down here. So it was fun.
Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about now because I was at work also for that 2013 one because I would have been a couple of years into my career at the first place that I worked and I remember going outside with people and making pinhole projectors. Yeah,
it's the best.
Good time.
So when I was in college, undergrad, I got a applied math degree, but I did a lot of like independent study work and a lot on like systems of differential equations, basically. And one of the big ones we worked on was the n body problem. Are you familiar?
Does not probably sound is. Familiar.
Oh, it doesn't? So it was like Newton's like laws put together into like an equation kind of format. And you basically say, hey, there are n bodies, celestial bodies, and they're, you know, rotating, gravitating towards each other. And I guess I'm explaining this to the listeners as well, but it was so nerdy and so cool to be like, basically, you know, here's two bodies and they have two masses and they have two initial positions and they have two initial velocities. Where do they go next? And do they orbit? Can they orbit each other and all these different things? And apparently there was a big update in that problem recently where they found three bodies and how they could orbit each other without intersecting or anything like that. It was kind of cool.
Remind me later. There's a game somewhere, just some simple browser game or maybe it's a phone app game or something where it's a gravity physics game and you like launch a ball in a certain direction around like a black hole looking thing. Ooh. And you're like, your goal is to get X number of things orbiting the black hole. Sometimes there are two black holes, so you got to launch them just right so it does like a figure eight motion, but it doesn't get sucked in.
Yep, that sounds like n body, like, you know, like the equations in action, basically, because that would happen. Like you have to hit the right angle so that it's like in Apollo 13 where they had to like slingshot around the moon and stuff like that. They had to work it. So I love that stuff.
Yeah, I don't directly work with orbital mechanics in my job, but I work with the people on my team have to do orbital mechanic work, and I just do the electrical work. But
that's cool. I love it. Anyway,
yeah. What about you?
Cool. Are you? Yeah. Life's good. I think it's official. I don't know. Did I mention it last week that I officially left my job? And so this week I have taken the week off. It's been fantastic, just taking some time to reset. I realized that I needed it and realized that it is nice to have nothing to do and to do a lot of things in the meantime.
Yeah,
because I can't sit still. I have ADHD. I just hate watching TV. Like it's hard for me to even watch movies sometimes because I'm like, man, I could be doing other things.
A lot of time with kids though.
Yeah, well, no. So the kids are at daycare, in the evening and stuff. So the kids are at daycare and in school. And so I am, when I, like this morning or like yesterday, I had like a list of things I just wanted to do. And some of them were baking a pie. And one of them was going for a run. And another thing was, working on, just random little projects. And so I love that stuff. I love having time for those things. And so that's even why I'm looking forward to this new job, because I'll be able to put in my time during the day, but I'll get my commute back and I'll get my lunch break back. I'll have plenty of extra time in the day because I'm working from home now. So
most important question though, what kind of pie?
It was a pecan pie, or if you're from the south, a pecan pie. So this pecan pie, I won a pie competition for a church I was at. There were like 15 pies in the running, 5 judges, and it was a unanimous decision that my pie was the best pie.
Dang.
It was this pecan pie. Yeah. So
that's awesome.
It's one of my proudest moments in life. Like it's up there, top 15, 20 or so.
Nice.
Winning that pie competition.
Well, I just came up with this idea earlier today of doing like a whiskey secret Santa for Christmas, Christmas. So maybe you can, maybe a pecan pie is what you
should try with some like bourbon added to it.
Oh yeah. Right.
Speaking of bourbon added to it, are you entry buzzing on anything?
I just poured just some Maker's Mark. I finished it already, but a Maker's Mark store pick, cask strength stuff. Yeah.
I forgot I had this bottle.
Looks like a Michter's 10 Rye. Yeah. Michter's
10 Rye. Yeah. So I got this at the place we met.
Oh, yeah.
Total Wine in Gilbert.
When, what year? Like, when did
you? This was probably, because I met you towards the end of my time there. This was like probably 5 months before that. This is a 2021. And one day it was just on the shelf. And we all walked in and we weren't sure anything. It wasn't on the shelf. It was behind the case.
That's what I was going to ask.
But I was like,
in the glass case though.
Yeah. And we just walk in. And I'm like, that's a friggin' MiG 10. And the other guy saw it too. And he apparently like was tipped off that there was a MiG-10. And so he saw it first and there were three bottles and there were three dudes standing there. And I'm like, I get the next one. So
yeah, right.
Yeah.
I, last year, I got a Michter's 22 from the exact same store. There was literally one though. And who knows, maybe the, Michter's 10 Rye. Mm-hmm. So it was, I got the 2022 Michter's 10 Rye.
Nice.
And like, who knows how, yeah, I got a cat running around here.
What's this cat's name?
This cat's name is Lupin.
Lupin.
The one that made an appearance during the drink along is Tom.
Oh, nice. It's like, so, pay attention to me.
I know, right? Yeah. One of these days, I'll probably make a vocal appearance in an episode too. Maybe, I don't know. But anyway, I got a 2022 Michter's 10 Rye from the same store. You know, people know when stuff's coming. I'm not one of those people.
How do they know?
I don't. I mean, they know because they know that guy over there or whatever. Yeah. But maybe just there was a covert operation happening on this one particular day that I just happened to be the first one who lined up that day. Mm-hmm. And so, boom, I was the first one in the door. I got the one and only Michter's 10 Rye right there. So that was a fun memory for me.
That's awesome. I love, like, those moments are like, they're just great moments for the
heart. I know. Yeah, when, but
like, this was all worth it.
the other 51 Fridays that year were no dice.
Exactly. So I forgot to mention. Did I mention it last week? Because we recorded, me and Ben recorded on Saturday. So yeah,
drink.
There was that event. Yeah, and and there was the ABC event where I waited in line from like 4:30 to 10, and got a Parker's Heritage Rye 10-year. So that was good. But then somehow the dude in front of me, two places ahead of me, knew that they would have the Parker's Heritage. And he like told me he had all these connections and stuff. And I'm like, dude, I hate that. And I love that at the same time.
I know.
Because it is frustrating that like I'm not there and don't have that. Nor do I kind of want to, because that's kind of it's like when you get that far, like you're pretty obsessed. But then again, it'd be really nice. So,
And it's like when people put in the work, I get it. They deserve it. If they put in the work, I get it.
It's also like very illegal. Or,
I know. So
there's a lot of illegality or whatever you call it. Like a lot of things that are illegal to get that information.
So, for sure.
Especially in Virginia.
But I mean, there's people
that got jail time.
Oh yeah, I heard about that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But good call on the Michter's as the entry buzz for what we're drinking today.
What could it be? I'm sure the people that, you know, clicked on the episode have no idea what's to come.
I know, right?
That's what's always funny. It's like, have we mentioned what we're drinking yet? Well, everyone knows.
I know. The best episodes are the ones where you get to news and you haven't even mentioned what you're drinking yet today.
Yeah.
But today we're drinking the 2023 editions of Shanks and Bombergers.
Hey, blue painter's tape means Brian Rapp joint.
Yep. Yeah. I've got the bottles. Cole's got the samples. Yeah. And a special extra idea today is that I'm going to have you pour the first quarter, just like a quarter of the sample of each, into a different glass, and you're going to make a shank burger.
Oh, I like that.
So it's just a combo of the two. I've heard on the internet that combining the two makes a pretty decent product when you bring them together. And I have done it already. Mm-hmm. I won't give you my exact idea about it, but you probably got a good feel of how I feel about it if I'm making you do it right now.
Yeah, totally. You know, it's funny with the episode we did on Found North. It made me believe. I mean, like, I'm sure it's crazy, but like blending whiskeys, how hard it is to get it right. It's like, it really convinced me of that. Like if I ever wanted to start blending, it's going to be a pain.
I know. Right. And just the idea of you've got all these, incrementing and percents of 10 and try a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Now a little bit of that and a little bit of this. Like you spent there actually on, after the episode that you did with Found North, I was following their Instagram. And nice. I saw posts that they were posting of they're working on batch 8 and it's them sitting at a table with like 100 Glencairns in front of them.
Dang.
Something ridiculous where they're going through and tasting each one, and surely they got to be spitting that out after they taste it, otherwise they're just going to die.
Yeah, but like I feel like spitting it out isn't the full effect.
I know.
Like, I've done wine tastings. Like, when I worked at a liquor store, they're like, hey, try these five wines and spit them all out. And I'm like, I get it. I get a feel for it. But I also feel like it's like, you know, the act of like sipping and swallowing is just what I expect the full experience to be. You know, yep. It's like, yeah.
I'm no scientist, but I believe the back of the tongue has taste buds too. I mean, there's got to be some effect there. I don't know.
Again. Well, even like there's a, you know, you eat chocolate, for example, like something you really enjoy that kind of just fades. Like if you're chewing on a caramel or something like that, if you're into, you know, caramel, for me, it's like, you know, you chew, and you swallow. What if instead of chew, swallow, you just kept chewing? And it's like, surely you would get more flavor, but there's something about swallowing that caramel that it's like, there's a biological evolutionary reason we would swallow that caramel quicker than hanging on to it as long as we could.
Exactly.
I don't know. I think it's like part of the brain saying like, hey, this makes it even better when you,
No, right. It's the lizard brain saying, hey, this is good. You should probably eat it.
Yeah. You might as well get the calories from it too.
Yeah. So. Right.
So anyway, well, I think it's time that we scooch over to our next segment that we like to call the business section, not the business section. I don't know what I'm talking about. The history section. But anything else you want to say before we scooch over?
No, I'm good. I'm actually really excited for this history because I don't know much about it. I think there's many things that are undisclosed about this. So I wish you the best of luck.
Yeah, for sure. So we'll be right back after this quick walk break. Here we go. And we're back. No big notes to get to this week outside of the history. So we're going to get into it. We're drinking Shanks and Bombergers, both 2023 releases. This is definitely our first episode ever regarding either Shanks or Bombergers, but it's definitely not our first episode for a Michter's product. That's right. Shanks and Bombergers are both Michter's brands, and they're part of the Michter's Legacy series. And where did I leave off? So we've done a few episodes though on Michter. It's actually episode 6. We drank the 2016 vintage of the 10-year bourbon Michter's. Episode 129, we drank the toasted barrel bourbon, which was the 2014, the first release they did, which was amazing, that one. Episode 185, we drank the 10-year rye, which I believe was this one right here. Episode 225, we drank the 2022 barrel strength rye, which I believe you sent in, Brian, I think.
Yes.
But either way, this definitely covers more about the Michter's, or more, you know, about the Michter's distillery over the years and the history. But I'm going to keep it on the shorter side as we're drinking two whiskeys today, so that can usually take up more time. So let's talk about Shanks, Bombergers, and the Michter's distillery. In 1753, a guy named John Shank, a Swiss Mennonite farmer, started an unofficial distillery in what is now Newmanstown, Pennsylvania. He and his brother Michael didn't really, like, at first intend for it to be a big deal. More so, they were farmers of rye grain. And I've said this before, what do you do with grain so it doesn't spoil? You turn it into whiskey. You ferment it, you distill it, and that doesn't go bad. But grain can go bad. But it started to take off, and it was eventually handed down through the family. So that's just the big origin here with John Shank, what they named Shanks after, the legend behind, what became the Michter's distillery, sort of. So about 100 years later, a Pennsylvania Dutchman named Abraham Bomberger stepped up, and he purchased that same distillery, that the family had handed down, since John Shank. He kept it running from 1860 to 1919 because Prohibition forced it to shut down. But in 1942, a homeboy named Lewis Foreman took over for like a moment, but then he was drafted into World War II service. But when he got back, he decided to repurchase it in 1950. And he started the brand Michter's in honor of his son, Michael, and sons, Michael and Peter. Michter's, technically. Anyway, things didn't go well. Always go well for Michter's. And in 1989, it went under. The distillery closed. But in 2004, only 15 years later, the brand was revived. A Pennsylvania distillery. Am I right? Wrong. Not exactly. The old Bombergers distillery wasn't even really used, even though Michter's basically put their name on it last. But it's still falling apart, apparently. It's like deteriorating in near Schaeferstown, Pennsylvania. So if you want to go to Schaeferstown or Newmanstown, Pennsylvania, you can see this distillery that is rusting and falling apart and call it the Michter's distillery or the Bombergers distillery or the Shanks distillery. Anyway, Michter's is produced in Kentucky and they've sourced for many years. And who knows, maybe some other stuff is MGP juice. I actually didn't look into that yet, but they are a big Kentucky brand at least. But they're making their own stuff in Louisville too. So if you ever want to go to the Michter's distillery, go to Louisville. And good for them making their own stuff too. But I think they're still also sourcing a little bit, especially for their older stuff. Mm-hmm. But that's why they named these two Legacy Series whiskeys after these two guys, Bomberger, Abraham Bomberger, and John Schenck. Because, they were along the process of the Michter's distillery. So let's get into what we're drinking today. There's Shanks and Bombergers. These are both yearly release whiskeys from Michter's Distillery. And these are the 2023 releases of each. Let's start with Shanks. This is neither a rye nor a bourbon, but rather an American whiskey. In fact, it's called a Kentucky Sour Mash whiskey on the bottle. Oh, nice. Thank you. And so they say they use the sour mash process for fermentation, which I'm not even going to go into it, but it has its benefits and it's not too rare a thing in Kentucky. It's used quite a bit. In fact, it's a very healthy way to keep, what do you call it?
Consistency. Like
consistency, as well as it keeps mold away and like bad bacteria growth. It keeps that away because of the sourness of the the product that they put from, I'm getting into it now, but they take some of the last batch, they put it in the new batch for the fermentation and it kills bad bacteria, produces a consistent kind of product, as well as it's kind of like a sourdough starter. I won't get into it more than that. But yeah, it's apparently a small batch, even though that's not well defined, especially by Michter's. But it says to have a lot of rye in it, including malted rye. But there's no mash bill given. There's no other details given. A portion was aged in 18-month seasoned American oak staves that were then toasted and charred. And the other portion was aged in 24-month seasoned staves from the Vosges area of France. So imagine like what we typically expect of like Limousine oak or what would they use to age cognac and stuff like that. These staves were also toasted. Some might think that this might be why they were disqualified from being a bourbon or a rye, but that is not the case. No American law for bourbon or rye requires American oak. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Now you know, because it has no, it doesn't need to be, it just needs to be oak. So you can do, a Mizunara oak for a bourbon as long as it's toasted and it's the container which carries the whiskey. So look it up if you don't trust me. 91.2 proof. And now we'll talk about the Bombergers. This, on the other hand, is a bourbon and a Kentucky straight bourbon at that. No idea where it comes from. No idea what the mash bill is, but a portion of it was aged in Chinkapin oak, Quercus Muhlenbergi. This oak was seasoned and air dried for over 3 years before toasting and charring. Some, even though it's a bourbon, it is a rye bourbon apparently, because it's got rye, some malted rye in the mash bill. 108 proof. Total wine price, Shanks 110, Bombergers 120.
Can confirm.
How did you get those?
Ah, yes. Another shout out to my buddy David, who helped me get the twice barreled rye that I was talking about in my previous episode. I didn't go early to Total Wine this day, but it was like 9:01 or something. And so I was like on my way to work and figured I'd just pop in and see.
Nice.
And so I go in and I see him on the counter, and you could only grab one. So I grabbed the Shanks because I didn't really know much about him at all. And which is supposedly not the one to grab, so don't follow my lead on that one. But I did grab the Shanks first, because if I'd heard anything, I'd heard that there was a higher rye percentage with the Shanks. So yeah, I was like, I'm a rye guy, so I'll go with the Shanks. And then so I round the corner, and sure enough, David and another guy, Brian, were standing around there, and I was like, oh yeah, did you guys grab one of these? And David was like, nah, I don't think I want any. I think I'm good, whatever. And I was like, okay, well, you want to grab me one? You want to grab me one so I can get both? So David went over and grabbed I think he got one of the last two Bombergers too.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so just barely made it. So that's I was funny. Able to buy one through him and get both that way.
Nice. That's cool. Yeah, I don't think I've ever had either.
Well, I better pop this cork then.
Do it. Ooh, a nice popped cork. All right, I got my Shanks on the left, Bombergers on the right. Ooh, different colors.
Keep that quarter for the blends.
Yeah, that's right. All right, I'm going for Shanks first.
Yeah, Shanks first for sure. Totally. Oh, did you pour both? May as well.
I did. Yeah.
All right, well, here's a Bombergers pop. Totally different.
Awesome.
Yeah, good. Way different. Yeah.
Everyone's got to be unique. It's like a snowflake thing. Every cork pop needs to be unique. So, first, with Shanks up front, I got a cotton candy smell for a little bit, but then I don't get it anymore. Like, I was like, oh wow, cotton candy, and then it's like, for some reason,
cotton candy.
My next few sips,
I'm getting citrus, kind of like a mellow citrus, like a sweet orange or something.
I'm just gonna say it. It's not a huge turnoff. There's almost like a. It sounds weird, but like a bile smell, but it's almost like fleeting. It's like, wait, was that throw up or was that the whiskey? But I enjoy it more than not the bile smell, but I enjoy the smell of this. But every now and then I'm like, wait, is that throw up?
Yeah Well, that'll
no, I'm not getting it anymore.
Okay, good. I was gonna say, well, it's like once you get thoughts like that in your head, you can't get them out
sometimes.
And so every time you go back for a sniff, it's like, okay, let's see if I get that bile smell again. So of course you're gonna get it every time.
No, I think it's gone away, just like the cotton candy.
Yeah, I'm team orange rind, kind of like an oily orange.
Yeah, almost like you know, the oil you get from like spritzing for like a cocktail or something like that. Yeah, you took a sip, but
yeah,
I'll go in. It doesn't smell like a rye, that's for sure.
No, not at all. And in general, I'm not a huge malted rye guy. I haven't done a lot of research to that effect, but the couple malted ryes that I've had have been some of the least favorite things I've ever had in my life.
You ever have the New Riff malted rye?
No, I've specifically stayed away from it.
Yeah.
There's an Atlanta distillery, I think, called Resurgence. They have or maybe that's the name of the rye. Maybe it's called the Resurgence Rye.
Yeah.
But anyway, that might be my absolute bottom least favorite thing I've ever had in my entire life. And I believe that's 100% malted rye. And it was I don't even remember what any tasting notes were on it. I just remember immediately being like, nope. Fortunately, I just had it as a sample, so anyway, the it's thin, it's light in a thin sense. It's not watery, because there is a decent amount of flavor there, but it's like it does kind of taste acidic. Maybe your bile note is kind of getting to me, but like it has this like kind of bitter bite, like a side of the tongue, both sides of the tongue kind of acidic bite to it, and I get a little bit of citrus still, I think, but just kind of like a bitter citrus.
Yeah, It's definitely not like impressive to me, but I don't hate it. But yeah, citrus is kind of the front note, but it's a very light citrus, similar to that, you know, the oily citrus we were talking about for like a, especially an orange as opposed to like a lemon for me or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's not really like pop, you know, like anything. It's kind of just, I hate to say it, but meh, on the palate for the, neat.
Yeah. There are some baking spices in there on the finish, kind of just left with a little bit of spice on your breath. I'll go ahead and go water.
Getting, I added a little water to it. I'm still getting a little bit of that like weird sour throw up kind of note, but I forgot about it until I sniffed it again. I'm like, oh, there it is. But it's not like, it's like, wait, is that throw up? Like, it wasn't like, oh, this is definitive throw up.
Right. Well, but I don't have any kids. You've got kids. You're more of an expert in throw up than I am, probably. Dude,
this year has been a crit. Like, I rarely ever throw up myself. I've done it like in the last 10 years, I've thrown up twice. But there was this one time I had to clean up my wife's throw up and my daughter's, but like the wife's was worse for sure.
Never have I ever thrown up in bed. Never have I ever had to clean up throw up in bed. Fortunately. Oh my gosh. Wait,
luckily. Yeah. Neither one were in bed. They were both on.
Yeah.
Well, one was okay. So my wife's going to hate this, but she threw up as she was driving one time and I cleaned up the car and yeah, that was rough.
Because, I've heard a story like that. Have you ever told that on the podcast before?
Maybe I did. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. And it was like all over the wheel, that steering wheel and stuff. But I was like, I get to be a good husband. And like, I can plug my nose like the best of them.
I have all the confidence in the world of my ability to just, if something needs to get done, I get in there, get it done.
Totally.
I added water to this though. I'm getting a little more leather on the nose now. I'm actually getting a little leather on the nose now. A little earthiness. Just a little though.
The interesting, on the palate, I feel like it didn't get thinner, which is interesting.
Yeah. I think that spice kind of carried it through, made it not get thinner. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just about potentially as you know, watered down or not watered down, but like thin as it was before. But potentially a little bit less than, like, potentially a little more flavor than the neat pour, which is funny to me.
What do you mean by flavor there?
Like as if it were watered down flavor, it's almost like less watered down than the neat pour.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
I poured a smidge more here. I'm going to drop an ice cube. Yeah.
A little bit of oak, a little bit of citrus. Almost like a watered down old fashioned.
Oh yeah.
Like
yeah, really almost like the way like you kind of get a dry woody sweet.
Yeah, 100%. Like it's like as if the ice melted too much on your old fashioned and you're like, "Oh, okay. That's kind of what I'm getting here."
And mouthfeel in general though, like it kind of reminds me I like Four Roses more than I like this, but it reminds me of a Four Roses. I think a buddy of mine put the idea in my head once that Four Roses is a very summertime bourbon. It's light and refreshing and it just kind of pops. It's not, it's not that heavy, like a stout or porter beer that you want in the wintertime. Like so it's got that, like, it's got that brightness that makes me think of a summertime.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's definitely not a darker vibe to it as opposed to the brighter ones we've talked about. I just added ice.
Yeah, me too. And I don't really smell anything.
Yeah, there's not much there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just smelling like dry wood, I think. I can't think of anything else.
Yeah, it's kind of wood, like a oaky on the palate. It's still so light.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's all I got to say about that one. I'm pretty much done with Shanks.
I wonder if. I wonder what they think about the like the, because they were pretty into on the website, they were talking about the oak finishes. I wonder how much was of that French wood or French oak.
Yeah.
But either was way, it, I don't like notice French oak, but I have a pretty, it might've been.
Yeah. I couldn't remember if you just it related from a certain it. Reason.
But like, yeah. All right. What about this bomber? Let's see how this goes.
Yeah. I figure we save this one for last. See you take a sniff of this.
Nice. Kind of just standard bourbon-y notes.
Exactly. To me, this smells, it kind of smells like Maker's Mark. Like it's just got vanilla brown sugar, just classic. It's a little sweet vanilla brown sugar nose.
Did you watch the Matt Madness where I hit the bottle?
I definitely watched all the Matt Madness.
Yeah.
But I just
so
don't
there
have
was the one where I called the exact bottle.
Oh, it was like it. BEP or it was like, yeah, it was yeah, one yeah. of the mm-hmm. FAEs or something mm-hmm. like that. Yeah.
So I didn't get the exact, what do you call it? The code.
Yeah.
But I did say this is a Maker's Mark wood finishing too. Series.
Yeah.
And one of my proudest moments in life, add that to the top 20.
Awesome.
And because I was like, I was so proud of myself during that madness because I didn't know I was good at that. Like, and I was true. Like I kept questioning I was like pure imposter syndrome. Like, just like, no, it's just lucky. That's completely lucky. And by the end, I was like, I'm freaking good at this thing.
Yeah. And the episode that you got out, I think mm-hmm. you were within like a point.
I was 1 point away from winning. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or from tying for the win. Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah, very close.
Yeah. And they said if he had picked bottle D or sample D to be the triple score one, I would have won. Yeah.
Yeah.
But either way, even if it weren't for the triple score, I would have lost by 2 points total at a high scoring game too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, I didn't remember how the whole triple thing went, but
it was triple the score of any one. I think it was the tasting or the nose and tasting round was triple the score for the what turned out to be the fireball pour.
Oh
yeah. So but I did okay. It was just the funny thing is that I thought it was the gas station fireball as opposed to the, and if I had said it was the standard fireball, I would have won.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. But I really hope I get invited back next year because
I know. And it was super fun to watch too. Super fun.
Yeah, it was good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was so surprised Robbie won his first round too. I'm like, Robbie Dedlow. So
at least, yeah, he had so much fun on there. It was so much fun watching him on there.
Yeah.
Just sip yet on this. It this is just to me, it's very classic bourbon. It's there's a little bit of rye spicy, so I could see it being kind of like a high rye bourbon, but it's vanilla brown sugar. And I did entry buzz on Maker's Mark, I guess. But this is like Shanks is like more unique in a like, huh, this is interesting kind of way. Mm-hmm. But Bombergers is like, if somebody loves bourbon and you poured them a pour of this, they would down it all without thinking twice about it.
Yeah. This actually gives me vibes of Knob Creek and Wild Turkey 101 at the same time.
Huh.
Knob Creek in terms of like, there's a slight, it tastes a little more like knob to me. But then the oak of the Wild Turkey 101 shows up a little more. So it's kind of like a mixture for me.
I am getting oaky, what's the word? Tannins. Mm-hmm. My mouth is drying out a little bit. Yeah.
For the that's the first note I noticed. In fact, I felt it before I even tasted it.
Yeah.
kind of that dry taste. To be honest, it's definitely better than the Shanks.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely not a bourbon that I would buy because of the level of oak and the astringent kind of feel of that oak that I'm getting from this one.
Right.
It, like we've talked about before, I'm pretty sensitive to maybe not over oak, but I'm just sensitive to when oak is very present.
Right. Your tolerance level for oak is lower than your average person. Yeah. Probably.
But then again, you know, I love certain older aged whiskeys, but they just, I don't know. I think the proof has to do with it as well. And this is 108 proof with some of that oak as well. And so
speaking of over oaked well, not over oaked. I was watching Fred Minnick's review of Eagle Rare 19. Oh,
yeah.
I think he just released it today, maybe, or yesterday, yeah, or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it was yesterday. But yeah, he said it's not over oaked at all, man. He loved it.
I've never had an over oaked Eagle Rare 17. That's the thing. It's like, why I said that. It was like, maybe just the proof. Yeah. But although it's a 101 now, so
yeah.
Very jealous of, because he had, did he have a sample or do you have a full bottle?
Sample.
Yeah, it better be.
Come the on. Distillery samples, they looked, I don't know if they were smaller volume wise, but they weren't the same flask shape. They were actually like a little cylindrical bottle shape, and it made me wonder if it was a little smaller than normal. But I mean, not that anyone who got those should be complaining, as he said himself. So
yeah, straight up. Yeah, when we got it back in 2020, when we got the full, it was 4 ounces a pop, and I was able to share, 2 ounces with Robbie at the time. And,
God, that's awesome.
That was crazy. Yeah.
Did you guys run through all five, like week after week after week, or how'd you do that?
Yep. No, we did it 1 week at a time. Yeah.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, we had to savor each one. And that's why, like, looking back, it was like, Weller was good, Stag was good, but that Saz 18 was phenomenal that year. And Eagle Rare was okay that year. It wasn't anything too crazy.
Yeah.
And Handy was not good in that year, in my opinion. That was like when, we've talked about this before, but like when in 2021 where they got rid of George T. Stagg because it wasn't up to par, I was like, dude, you don't care about up to par. That's why I still believe in double George, very Stagg.
That I was rolling when he said that. I was listening earlier today. Whenever it was. Double George, very Stag. I love it so much.
Mark my words, I give it 50% probability that they'll call it that too. No, they probably won't.
All right, where are you at on this? Ooh, water,
much better water? Palette with some water.
So yeah, I'm getting like some smokiness on the nose. I haven't sipped, well, I don't think I've sipped water yet. I might forget already, but I'm getting a little smokiness, a little like a barbecue smoke. Kind of like it.
So that astringent, like dry out your mouth kind of oak went away. Yeah, I much more dig it with ice or with water. Still a little bit hot. It's got I wouldn't call it a bite, but it's got, it's much more enjoyable. Getting caramel, getting those nice quality bourbon notes.
Both of these are obviously lacking sweetness. Whereas on like a wheated bourbon or something where you'd get some classic sweet wheatness.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Nowhere to be found on these, really. And so in that sense, to me, they drink at proof or above. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Shanks is way above because the Shanks is like 90 proof, but that thing drank like 100 to me.
Oh, to you? No, it was 90 to me.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Just because of the lightness. Maybe not the heat, but just the flavor lightness.
The amount of flavor and spice was surprising, and that's what drives my proof assessment to be high on that one.
Yeah. And that was another thing about Mad Madness. I did really well with the proof stuff.
Oh, yeah?
And the funny thing was that when I did get it wrong, I was very similar to the other guys. Like,
right. Yeah. Validation, even more validation.
Yeah. And that's when it was the third round that I was like, okay, I'm good at this.
Yeah.
Because the first two rounds I was like, surely a fluke. But even though I lost the third round, I was so proud of myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey. Your stars align and you get on the podcast, who knows what the future holds in terms of Matt Madness.
I know. I would have so much fun on that. I love, just ask Sam. I set up blinds for myself all the time. And there are days I need to do this more because I really enjoy it when I do it, but I'll tell her like, hey, go in there and pour me anything. And I'm going to try to guess what it is. I was like, pour me anything, but you got to remember what you poured.
Yeah, exactly. So how have you done with that? Have you picked up things?
So to be honest, I haven't done terribly well.
Mm-hmm. That's part of it.
But I just have so much fun doing it.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at like Dan from the Bourbon Junkies, and I'm sure that's what he does all the time. And he does so well on Matt Madness. And because I'm sure he does that a lot. And I rarely ever did that. I used to do that a lot when I lived in Colorado, but for some reason I haven't picked it up. But these days it's like certain things. I mean, I've 275 episodes, you know, and yeah, and we are 76 at this point, and I things certain things have stuck. And like, for example, like I usually can tell Maker's Mark juice, and I can usually tell Dickle juice, and I can usually tell like Buffalo Trace juice and stuff like that. And that means a ton in terms of things like that, where it's like, you know, you're calling out, even mm-hmm. if it's like, if it's Buffalo Trace weeded or rye, Nashville number one or Nashville number two, it's like, it's all Buffalo Trace juice. Like you can really call it out. And I'm sure you even could too.
Well, put me under the microscope and I'll do it my best.
And maybe for this Secret Santa we should do some of it blind too.
Actually, man, that'd be so fun. Yeah. Like some
special pours but blind. Yeah,
two known samples and then one unknown sample. That'd be mm-hmm. super fun. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, ice, actually the best pour yet for palate for me.
Oh yeah,
yeah, I can dig that with ice. It took away all that overwhelming oak, brought in some sweetness that I haven't experienced yet, and it's good.
I dig it. Yeah, oak and sweetness for sure. I don't think I liked it the most. I think the ice, the carameliness of traditional mm-hmm. bourbon flavors that I was getting on neat, that the ice just kind of turned off for me.
I gotcha.
It was a little muted. I didn't get any new flavors on the ice or anything, so I was just kind of meh about it overall.
So this third pour, yep. is it one to one?
One to one.
Okay. Oh, I probably screwed it up by pouring them at the same time.
Yeah, whatever.
Let's assume they're one-to-one.
Yeah, I know, right? This is not an exact science. This is for fun.
Yeah. Let's give the old spin, Jay. Make this whiskey dizzy. Speaking of which, shout out to Drampup.
Yeah.
It's always fun to shout out to Drampup because you can tell that Dramhound will like let her know and she will be so excited. You saw her the other day.
Yep.
She is so just lit up by those little things. You can tell she's just like I don't know. Like I know. She's just got like just these glowing eyes that it's you're like, just like,
am I on TV?
Pretty much, yeah. Mm-hmm. So shout out to Drampup. We love you, Willow. Yeah. All right.
I might have poured a little too much Bombergers. My nose is a little peppery.
It's decent. I actually think this is the best nose of all three, or of all the, yeah, three of them.
God, I can't wait for you to say that about palate, water, and ice, too.
Huh.
When I've done this before, palate is kind of best of both worlds.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but I agree.
I mean, it's not great.
Yeah, I agree, actually.
It's not great, but you get some orange oils from the shanks uh-huh. and you get yeah. the classic bourbon sweetness from the Bombergers. I
agree.
Yeah. Do we rate this one too? I'm already thinking.
We should, yeah. Might as well.
The shank.
This is, yeah, I want to try with some ice. We'll start with, or yeah, maybe just water first. Let's do that quick. Just in case water's the best.
Yeah, I poured enough to do water here, so may as well do it too. Oh, not enough water there. Man, I miss the fire in the holes. I'm not about try to pay homage to that.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's always a mess.
The audio on it. Okay, so let's think about this. 90 proof, 108 proof. So if we truly do half and half, we're at like 99 mm. or so.
Yeah.
But of course, now we got water, but yeah.
I don't like it better with ice or with water. It kind of gave it a weird oakiness.
I don't get any. Don't get any of my orange oils anymore with the water.
Mm-hmm.
I just kind of get pepper, pepper and wood. And I'm just going to have to cube into this. I'm no way I'm pouring more than this. I gotta be done.
Yeah, me too.
I'm going to go ahead and cube it since water didn't impress me right away.
Cube it hard.
Oh yeah, cube it.
Yeah, nothing crazy on the nose, but yeah, last palate here.
Okay, no pepper on the nose on the ice. Can confirm.
It is agreeable with ice. I think it's the most agreeable.
Did you go ice already?
The best. I did, yeah.
So actually, with ice, I'm getting way more sweetness now.
Yeah, definitely sweetness.
Yeah, I'm getting all the peppery that I had earlier. I'm getting sweet instead of that pepper. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad we got to try this one because I didn't expect that to be that good. All right. I'm formulating my ratings.
Yeah.
All right. Shanks. Shanks is like a 7.4 for me. It's meh. Yep. Not bad. Not good. It's meh. But it's truly not bad. If it were bad, I would give it less than a 7. Bomb Burgers, pretty good. Especially the ice pour, I did like that, but I still don't feel like it was like too much higher than an 8. So I'm getting an 8.3 there. And then the combo, same, 8.3. It's just about the same. Okay. Rating wise,
same as Bomb Burgers. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I put the combo a little lower. I put the combo 8. I'm 8.2 Bomb Burgers, 7.2 Shanks. I think I give a full 1 point distinction between the two.
Yeah.
I think Shanks is a tier below Bomb Burgers without a doubt.
Yeah.
Worth the extra $10 to go Bomb Burgers.
Totally.
The combo is a fun little thing to do to meet somewhere higher than the middle. But but Bomb Burgers all day, every day.
So here's the question for you. You see it on the shelf. You see Bomb Burgers on the shelf for $120 again next year. Would you get it?
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
I buy things as I see them. If it's something I've never had before.
Yeah, totally.
As I was saying, the Michter's Tin Rye. Absolutely. I'd never had it before, but here it is. I got to buy it. Here's the Bomb Burgers. I got to buy it. But knowing what I know now, I'm not buying another Michter's Tin Rye. I'm not I'm not buying another Shanks or Bomb Burgers. The Michter's Tin Rye, in my opinion, was, you know, actually, now that I think about it, I'm surprised your take on Michter's Tin Rye isn't that it's over-oaked. Because
I normally would say that. Yeah, because when we did the episode, it was like 2 years ago, just about 2 years ago. It was one of the dry January episodes we did last year, or 2 years ago. And I wasn't super impressed. In fact, I was so unimpressed that John Hughes, I had an extra bottle, and John Hughes was like, and I was like, does anyone want this? And John's like, I'll take it. So nice. that's how it was. So yes, I like it. I don't love it.
Yeah. It's way fancy. Oakier than it has any right to be. Yeah. And I was at a dealio with some friends not too long ago, and somebody had the 2023 Michter's 10 bourbon.
Nice. Oh, I heard great things.
I know. Yeah, me too.
Was it good?
It was very good. Okay, good. But for me personally, it was too much oak.
Okay.
It had the same
Mick 10.
It had that same oaky quality that I found also in the rye that is just not my jam. But I could see how anyone would love this because it is super smooth, super agreeable, especially even give it to somebody who's not big on whiskey and they'll probably be like, dang, is this what all whiskey is like? Like it is. It's good.
That's good to hear.
It's just not.
I might not like it, especially with that oak.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's cool to know. Yeah, because I was super interested in finding me a Mick 10 rye. I mean, a Mick 10 bourbon this year.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm not as interested anymore.
Well, to be honest, I've never owned a bottle of Michter's 10 bourbon, but if I saw that on the shelf for $150, absolutely, I'd get it so that I could work my way through an entire bottle and and make my own assessment of it outside of just one night, one time.
Yeah, totally. No, that's cool. Okay, cool. Well, now that we've gotten to the ratings, I guess it's time for our next segment of the show. We like to call Whiskey World News.
All right, welcome back, everyone. This part of the show, we like to call Whiskey World News, where we read an article. Didn't write it, gonna read it. This one today comes from Louisville Public Media, and it is titled, "Is Kentucky Limestone Water Indispensable for Bourbon?" Written by Erica Peterson. This is topical because I knew Cole's got a bottle of Kentucky Limestone Water sitting on his desk right there.
Yeah.
So this is an old article. This is from like 2013. But
oh, wow. You know,
science is timeless.
Science is timeless.
I wanted to Google it and and try to understand why this might be important. So
nice.
And I paraphrase this a bit so I don't have to read the whole thing. So anyway, despite all the rules around the ingredients and processes of making bourbon, there's no rule that dictates what type of water has to be used. But many local distillers say no matter what the law says, bourbon isn't bourbon unless it's made with limestone water. University of Kentucky's geology professor Alan Fryer says that easy access to limestone water played an integral role in launching the bourbon industry here centuries ago. He believes it's more than just coincidence that Kentucky emerged as a leader in bourbon production in the late 1700s, given how prevalent limestone water is in the area. Allen's allegiance to the limestone water isn't just superstition. It has a high pH, which promotes fermentation. The limestone adds minerals like calcium, which I read in another article that the yeast feeds on the minerals found in the water. So it adds minerals like calcium, it filters out impurities, and most importantly, it filters out iron. Yep.
Nice.
Which gives liquor a bad taste. And I think I read in another article too that iron turns it black also.
Well, that was, we talked about that on the Marcos episode.
Oh, good. Okay, good. Yeah. So it turns it black, gives it a bad taste. So all that extra filtering helps. So filtering, extra minerals.
Hey, that's half the name of the podcast.
Extra filtering.
Yeah.
new podcast rebrand here. But anyway, I thought it was interesting about the high pH, which promotes fermentation. I'm no food scientist here, but if that's true, hey, I thought that was super interesting. Anyway, it's perfect for the early distillers who developed the bourbon there in the area. It explains why the industry's centered right there in Kentucky.
No, that's cool. No, and it makes sense to me.
Yeah, your water there.
Yeah. No, yeah, this Kentucky limestone water. I wonder if you like kind of like poured it out and let it like, you know, like what's left over, like the, so like limestone is calcium carbonate, and which can come in a bunch of forms. In fact, our bones are typically made of calcium carbonate. Our like seashells are made of calcium carbonate.
Chalk bone water over carbonate. There.
Bone water. And well, that's the thing. So that's actually where limestone comes from. Organic, you know, not organic because it's not carbon, but well, it's carbonate, yeah. But basically they say that certain areas have higher calcium carbonate deposits because of life forms. It's almost like fossil fuels, but on the other side, it's like limestone deposits are truly a buildup of like things like seashells, bones, teeth, you know, like all these kind of things that are like organic things.
The largest regions of death produce the best whiskey is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what it is. Whiskey's about death.
Yeah. And we need to do a future episode here where you send out samples of that water and we just sip water. Let's just compare Kentucky limestone water to Phoenix water.
To like certain types. You know, the funny thing is the best water I've ever had was when I lived in Colorado.
Oh, of course.
But it's like obvious because it's like spring water from mountains and stuff. But Phoenix had decent water.
Phoenix has decent water. Yeah. Sam and I went to Iceland.
Oh, yeah.
Here. Oh, and I got a bottle of Floki.
That's right. Yeah,
did I send you an extra?
You did.
You've had it before, but I might.
And you sent the other Floki, like the birch one or whatever. Yeah,
birchwood. That one's okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I honestly think I like the sheep dung one more than the birch one. Yeah, just because it's smokier. Right. It's got that poo quality everyone loves. Yeah,
solid poo quality. Right. But in Iceland, is it actual poo? Yeah.
Well, so yes, it is actual poo.
No, 100%.
Yeah, that's what they use.
But it's like cleaned by the liquor process.
I tell myself, at least. Yeah, we'll go with that. We'll go with that, sure. But when we were in Iceland, there was one time in particular that I was like, hey, there's this sweet river right here. I'm just going to drink some of this water. Like, I'm going to go over there and drink some of that water. So I particularly went over there and cupped a bunch of water and drank a bunch of water just so that
was it delish.
It was delish. Nice. I need to compare it to Kentucky limestone water, though, just to make sure. Mm-hmm. But it was pretty good.
Did you see any northern lights while you were there?
No, we were there. We chose to go in July. Okay. So there would be the most greenery and green grass, green everything. Mm-hmm. Like no worry about having to drive over any snow or anything. Totally. And that worked out really, really well. We're kind of all one way or the other. We decided to go all one way on going when it was summertime. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully sometime in the future, we'll go all the other way. Where you almost can't even leave Reykjavik. Mm-hmm. They'll close off the highways an hour or two east out of Reykjavik, mm-hmm. where like if unless you're local and you know what you're doing, you probably shouldn't go past this point.
Wow.
So maybe sometime in the future we'll go and specifically for the Northern Lights going during the winter. I think that'd be really cool.
I flew through Reykjavik. This was 2017, I believe. We went from Baltimore to Reykjavik to Frankfurt. And as we were probably an hour from landing in Reykjavik, the pilot came on the speaker, and they're like, hey, you know, I know you're all asleep and I apologize for waking you up, but just take a look out the left side of the plane and you'll see the Aurora Borealis. And I was like, I'm on the right side of the plane and everyone's asleep. And I don't want to like crawl over people or like make a scene.
Yeah,
but we were literally in the last row, and the flight attendants are like, hey, come back, because like, you know, you're next to that like back section of the flight attendant area. She's like, hey, if you want to see it, come back here. So I get back, window literally like 3 inches by 3 inches.
Yeah,
but it was still one of the most
it's like in a door
things I've ever seen. Yeah, pretty much. It was like one of those like exit door ones, but it was that small. And honestly, in like unbelievably gorgeous, what was going on in the sky.
That's awesome.
It was just green and purple and amazing. Yeah.
That definitely a bucket list item to see Northern Lights. Mm-hmm. Also, another one of my weird bucket list items. I guess it's probably not weird, but I have to see a bear in a river catching salmon jumping out of the river. That's like,
I like that.
I at some point in my life I have to go on some Alaskan cruise or something and see a bear wading in a river catching fish in its mouth.
My one of my dad's roommates in college got eaten by a bear.
What?
No joke. Yeah, look him up.
His downer, dude.
Art Schleyer. He was like known as the Siberian tiger hunter. He was basically like the Steve Irwin's counterpart to like Siberian tigers.
Wait, what was his name again?
Bart Schleyer. That's S C H L E Y E R.
And he got look him up.
You'll find like YouTube videos about him. You'll find like articles about him. But yeah, he went up to the Yukon with just like a bow and went bow hunting, and then they found his tent torn from the ground and found his skull, and like straight up bear got him.
All right. So, well, maybe careful. I'll, if I do my bear tour, maybe I'll do it helicopter only or something. Yeah. I don't know.
But that would be super cool.
That would be super cool.
I got to make some more bucket list items like that. That's like very specific.
I know, right? Oddly like specific, but yet very true. It needs to happen.
Yeah, that'd be super cool. But yeah. Okay. Where are we at? We finished. What do you, any thoughts yourself concerning the, limestone water?
Oh, the limestone water. I have yet to try it, so I'm gonna need a sample.
It'll change you. I still have this much after like years because it's all you're doing is two drops. You
exactly,
know,
so. Exactly. Yeah. And I will say, given what the article says, if we're gonna trust the article from 10 years ago, the importance of it comes from the distillation process, or it seems, or it promotes the high pH, promotes fermentation. Mm-hmm. The limestone adds minerals. It sounds like you're going to get the most benefit out of Kentucky limestone water if you're using it early on in the whiskey making process, and maybe not so much like adding drops afterwards.
Yeah.
No disrespect to Cole.
It's just one of those things that, I mean, heck, this stuff might be like, it might have bacteria in it at this point, where it's like, you know, so many times I've dipped my dropper in there. It's like when you have a water bottle that you opened and open later and you're like, this tastes weird.
Yeah.
Hopefully that's not the case, but maybe the limestone keeps them at bay. So who knows?
Maybe,
so.
Maybe it's extra pure, extra filtered.
Yeah. Extra chill filtered. Ooh. Hey, that's the name of the podcast.
I dig it.
I hear you might have a, what whiskey would you choose available this week?
Yes. Yes. Well, that I didn't write down, but I'm coming up with it right now. Today, this week's What Whiskey Would You Choose is, what whiskey bottle do you think is the prettiest bottle? Come on, men. Let me hear you tell me what the prettiest whiskey bottle is. I want to know the bottle that when you see it, even just in a picture, it can be any sort of completely unobtainable bottle by mere mortals. What's the bottle that when you see it, you're like, God, that's so pretty?
Well, besides American Spirits, or American Woman Spirits bottle, which is basically a naked woman, which I'm still going to say it to this day, was a decent whiskey considering it was kind of a gimmick in that way. I actually think Mick 10 is a beautiful bottle. You know, if I'm not going to consider, right back here, the Eagle Rare 17, which, you know, I think all the antique collections are beautiful, but if it's just bottle shape, they have a lot in common, but I really appreciate the labels of the antique collections and stuff like that. Yeah. But my answer will be Michter's 10 bottles. I just think it's cool. I think honestly, the shape is one thing, but I really like the extra thick base.
Yeah, right.
I'm into the extra thick base. I'm all about that extra thick
base. I'm all about that base. Yeah, that the tall shoulders really make that bottle stand out. I mean, you see it on a shelf and you see those shoulders standing up real tall, and then it cuts in as it comes down is super, super nice.
What is it? St. Cloud also shares that bottle.
Does it? I don't know.
Is it St. Cloud or is it St. something?
St.
Cloud.
It's I'm not
from
familiar. Like
Minnesota or something. Oh, I gotta look it up.
They're copying off the Michter's bottle.
I
mean,
that's a city Michter's of Minnesota. Bottle. Yeah.
So the only thing I can think of that might compare to your bottle that I also think is gorgeous is Old Fitzgerald. I'll take Old Fitzgerald on that one. It's literally like a decanter, but I will say the reason I'm picking it, in addition to it like being a beautiful looking decanter, is just the old timey bottle, the old timey logo, the Old Fitzgerald across the front. Just that I feel like it looks, it's the perfect blend of old timey and a decanter.
So yeah, totally.
I like it a lot. I think it's
so have you ever seen the Johnny Fitzgerald old bottle? This is like 2015 range. Look it up if you got a moment.
Yeah,
It's in a cool box, but it's like a 375, and it's worth like people will pay like $3,000-$4,000 for it. My friend had a bottle of it.
So, John E. Fitzgerald, is it like a special release of Old Fitzgerald?
Very special release. Yeah, it was. I don't even remember. It's a 20-year, but it's like a very like small bottle. You see the one I'm seeing with the keyhole and all that.
Well, oh, okay. Is it in a red box where the front of the box is a keyhole? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. I get it. I was looking for something that was maybe similar to an Old Fitzgerald, but
no.
Yeah, that's if the box was closed, it would just be a cool looking keyhole.
Totally.
Where like the logo on the bottle inside the keyhole perfectly frames the keyhole. Yeah, that
really does.
That's super pretty.
But yeah, I always thought that was kind of cool. But it was kind of basic in terms of shape, but I always thought that was like a crazy bottle to get.
Extra.
But yeah, like I said, my friend who I worked with him at the liquor store, or not the liquor store, at the bar I used to work at, he somehow got a bottle of it. And I don't know if he still has it, but
dang,
crazy bottle to have.
Yeah. And I will say on the Instagram votes here, when you're following on Instagram and voting on this, the presentation counts for something. So if it's got an extra cool box, if it's got an extra cool whatever, oh man, honorable mention. I'm a huge Lord of the Rings fan, and and I love
your wife, it looks like.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah, which is awesome.
Maybe even more than me, which I didn't think was possible before I met her. But the Angel's Envy ice cider cask box looks like the doors of Moria, the Mines of Moria. It's got this like arch and a super pretty like arched doorway look, and it's a really pretty teal color.
Oh, that's so Lord of the Rings.
And I even so we're getting our pantry redone next week.
Okay.
Because my shelves are sagging because I have too many whiskey bottles. But we also want to do some cool like cabinets out in the dining room too, and with the idea of having it be like a cool whiskey presentation area. And I was like, oh, I really want this box for it. And I did like 9 months ago, I did a search on eBay, a saved search. So it'll alert me if anybody puts up a Angel's Envy ice cider box, just the box. I don't care about that. But I actually bought a sample from somebody of the whiskey, and it was okay. I reviewed it on Discord, pull up the Discord and read my old review of this Angel's Envy, right? But the box is just really cool.
That's cool.
And on the eBay safe search, it came up one time. It was, hey, somebody put this up here. And I was like, oh, okay, how much do I really want to spend on a cardboard box that we used to hold whiskey? $30 with $10 shipping, $40. I could do that. And then like with literally 1 minute to go, I did my like $30 bid. And then it was like 30. 35, 42, 46, 65. It's I guess I'm never going to get one of these.
Then. Yeah. Well, keep it up. Keep it on there.
Yeah.
Sure. One day. Yeah. That's interesting, especially for that. It's not that crazy release, but they have a killer bottle for it. Yeah.
Yeah. True.
Or, I mean, a killer box for it, rather. So,
Angel's Envy, extra Whiskey World news. Angel's Envy is coming out with a cask strength rye. Have you heard about that?
No, but I do enjoy their rye. So.
I don't know if it's like next year's special release. I don't really know what the deal is about it, but Angel's Envy is coming out with a cask strength rye, just like they have a cask strength bourbon. That's an annual release. And sounds really good. If I see it on the shelf, I'll buy it, even if it's like $250, I guess. But definitely not spending any more than that, that's for sure.
You ever see the Mr. Sam box?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That was a cool box.
Definitely.
I had two of those at one point.
Two Mr. Sams?
Yep, and I traded both of them, believe it or not.
Was one a batch one?
I forget. Yeah, they're both batch ones. Yeah. And now they're worth like at least $3,000.
I was wondering if I should say that, but yes.
Yeah. No, the funny thing
maybe,
was
maybe $2,000, but
get rid of them. They were $250 retail.
Yeah.
And like I was talking to a guy that like kind of was a big collector. And he was like not interested at all.
Dang.
And I'm sure he looks back and regrets it, but
so what made you decide to not go ahead and at least open one just to see what it was like? Other than the fact that it was $250, which is a lot of money.
Yeah, no, that was a lot, but it was I think it was the fact that we were selling we were buying a house at that point. And I rarely these days, especially sell bottles, but that one I sold. Yeah. Or those two I sold. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I also didn't like it. I didn't like batch one.
So you tried it somewhere?
Yeah. Well, Jason Preston sent us some samples and I was like, glad I didn't drink it because it was way too oaky for me. Like there was so much going on.
Wow.
But it was like over oaky. Like it was like even beyond my sensitivity to oak, it was like beyond that. So
wow, sending samples of Mr. Sam, God among men, well, over here,
dude,
this guy
Jason Preston, like you should hit him up, because he had at one point like 15 bottles of it. So what? He might have one open and he might do you a favor.
Is he on Patreon? Is he gorgeous?
He is. He's gorgeous. He's
gorgeous. Yeah. I should have known.
He, I love Jason because we've always been tight, but at one point we finally got to meet, and this was like a year and a half ago, I think. And we met, he was basically driving down. He's Canadian. He lives in what's the city? Toronto area. And he's in Montreal. And he was driving down the East Coast to like do something in South Carolina. And he's like, hey, basically he had been sending me bottles that couriered to me easily that certain people wanted to trade but weren't willing to send to Canada through like customs.
Okay.
So he would be like, hey, can I send to you? And I'm totally fine with that, especially holding on to certain bottles. He had a batch one E.H. Taylor barrel proof. He had a batch one a Kentucky Owl sent to me.
Wow.
And stuff like that. He had like he had at least one hazmat pirate bottle or Elijah Craig barrel proof sent to me.
Don't get me started on those.
Yeah, dude, it was crazy. And and I just held on to him for him. And then he comes down. The dude's a pro. Dude's a friggin' pro. And he comes down. I take him to this whiskey bar. We try out all these amazing things together. And then he slips his credit card to the bartender without me seeing it. And I'm like, you little punk. But he was so happy to do that. And I love gifts. And I think that was a great gift to me. And
that's
appreciate that. So,
and it's a lifelong story now. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then he had like a Halliburton case basically of the slits in the like the foam to put those three or four bottles that he'd gotten from me.
Yep.
Too. But he's big into like batch ones.
Yep.
So like I said, there was Kentucky Howl, there was E.H. Taylor barrel proof. And then recently he got big on the Bernheim batch one.
I saw a picture of a cabinet. I don't remember whose house it was, but there were like three Bernheim batch ones in there.
That was probably me. Yeah.
Yeah, that's so.
and I'm happy to do that for him. Like he's a solid dude. And like what's the worst thing, you know, like it's like not even a problem. Like if you're gonna pick up your bottles on your own, we get to hang out, and then what's like this much space in a cabinet, you know, to me, nothing at all. So
yeah, when friendship comes down to space in cabinets, maybe the friendship is, you know, it's always worth it. It's always worth it.
Yeah. So anyway, we don't have last week's results from last week's What Whiskey Would You Choose. But I was right also about St. Cloud. That is the same shape as a Michter's 10.
Okay.
I think it's a Minnesota based brand, but I might be wrong.
Okay.
Is it St. Cloud? Wait, I just literally looked this up, but it was.
Oh, I see it now. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I see it now. There's a Total Wine brand now that I'm thinking about it too. It's called like Oak and Eden, Oak and Stage.
I've seen that. Yeah.
Something. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. Similar.
So anyway. But that kind of concludes it for this week. Next week we will probably be drinking, well in fact we will be drinking something with Ben Klepsig. I actually don't know exactly what yet, but in the future weeks to come, once we decide on a co-host, we do want to shout out real quick Starward Whiskey. That's Starward Whiskey. They're Australian brand. And they're doing amazing things with single malts. They were nice enough to send us two bottles, and we'll be drinking their Nova release as well as one of their special single barrels. And so keep an eye out for that in the next few weeks. I just want to shout them out because they were so kind to send us some bottles and be patient while we figure out our co-host situation. So any last words, Brian, before we close out the episode?
Just hoping that you have a good time at your new job next week.
Thanks, man. No, I hope so too. And I hope, hope we have, I'm hoping the same, Brian. And I hope you have a great week at your normal job.
Thank you so much.
The most of all listeners, I hope that our love of whiskey lifted your spirits.
You're both idiots.
Sweet.
So while that cat was on my lap, he decided to hork up a little bit. So let's remain paused for a sec. It was like,
yeah, you're good.
Like on my shoe, and I was like keeping it together. All right, hang on one second.
There you're good.